Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have an author with me who has been writing fiction since middle school and has the rejection slips to prove it. She says, "I even hand wrote a script on yellow lined paper for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was rejected. But little did I know at the time I was writing fan fiction. All I knew was I had a massive crush on Ilya Kuryakin, played by David McCallum, and I wrote myself, well, my older, more sophisticated alter ego, into that script as his love interest. Yes, even then I was writing romantic suspense. I just didn't know it was called that." Well, she is Sharon Buchbinder. Sharon is an RN. She provided healthcare delivery, became a researcher, association executive, and obtained a PhD in public health. When not teaching or writing, she can be found fishing, walking her dogs, or breaking bread and laughing with family and friends in Baltimore, Maryland, and Punta Gorda, Florida. And any fan of Man of U.N.C.L.E. is a friend of mine.
Well, I have to say, I was so tickled when I saw David McCallum playing Ducky on NCIS. I was just like, oh, my God. My crush is back. So.
Oh, my gosh. I love that, Sharon. I love that you wrote fan fiction and actually sent it out there. And your mom must have, or dad, who to help you send that in, yes?
No, I did it. All on my own.
You brave little girl, right?
Yes. I didn't know that there were ways that you were supposed to do things certain ways. I just did it.
Oh, my gosh. I love that story. I used to watch Man from U.N.C.L.E. every week with my mom, so I'm definitely a fan.
Yeah.
Well, now, let's talk about your books. Your first novel was titled Some Other Child. Tell us how that came to be written and published.
That book was my original, I'm going to go back to writing fiction book. I had been, as you mentioned, writing fiction for a long time, but then as I got older, I realized I wasn't going to pay any bills with that because nobody was buying what I was selling, and had a degree in psychology and biology, and really was desperately looking for a job, and I wound up at a hospital doing allied health, and then went on, as you noted, to get my PhD eventually. And when I turned 52, it was my midlife crisis, I decided that I was going back to write fiction. At that point, I'd made a tenured full professorship. I was chair of the department of health science at a university. And I was feeling that I had arrived in my professional career of healthcare manager, but I really wanted to go back to my original passion of writing fiction because, as I said to my husband, if I don't do it now, when am I going to do it? And he agreed. And Some Other Child is a mystery that blends all of that background. It blends my psychology. It blends epidemiology. It's about a researcher working at Johns Hopkins, which I did, but she's looking at sexually transmitted diseases and discovers that there's a pattern. And so in the course of uncovering this pattern and a predator, she also unravels some family secrets. And so I was able to weave in my family secrets along with the research that I'd done and epidemiological issues that are still in play even today. That said, it was my first book, and I rewrote that book 10 times, and I actually published novellas and other books before that one was accepted for publication by the Wild Rose Press because I had taken it and, as many authors do, put their first book in a drawer. And come back to it many years later. And when I pulled it out, I thought, maybe this isn't so bad. I could clean this up. And it was accepted for publication at that time. But, yeah. Well, that was my jumping off point. But I learned from that experience, I learned that I can't just write without a plan. And there are planners, and there are pantsers. And so the plotters are me, the planners now. I'm a reformed pantser, where you're writing by the seat of your pants, or other people call it organic writing. And if you're someone like Nora Roberts, who's been writing for, you know, in her entire life and knows the, you know, the backbones of a story like the back of your hand, that's great. But for somebody starting out, as I can still consider myself a relatively new fiction writer, that, you know, I need to have a plan so I know where I'm going. Joyce Carol Oates also says she needs a plan, so gosh, if she needs a plan, I definitely need a plan. So that was a big learning experience for me. You got to have a plan. And my writing's gotten better and faster because I actually have a roadmap of where I'm going now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, you've got to know what works for you. And it's interesting in that very first book that you pulled on all of your life experiences. You kind of bypassed the whole research point of that. And that book also won an award, correct?
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. It won the Paranormal Romance Guild Award. Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. I bet you were just thrilled.
I was. Anytime your book gets noticed like that, especially one that you labored over so long.
Yes.
It's like a yes.
I did it. Oh, my gosh. Now, there were several books after that one.
Yes. My novella, which is Kiss of the Silver Wolf. I did Kiss of the Virgin Queen. Those are basically in the same part of the world as, in the same world as my current novel, but placed in a different location. I had Obsession, which took place in Mexico and in Baltimore. I had to do a lot of research for that. I also had to do a ton of research for Kiss of the Virgin Queen because I was looking at four different religions and four different parts of the world for the Queen of Sheba, King Solomon myth, and that how that intersected and had a contemporary part to that story. Kiss of the Silver Wolf is a werewolf story, and that was sort of my jumping-off point into the shape-shifting paranormal romance. I started, as mentioned before, in mystery. Actually, my first short story was in horror and mysteries, and I also wrote science fiction, and I was published and won some awards for the short stories. But one of my friends said to me, why aren't you writing romance? And I said, why do you ask? And she said, because all of your stories have a romantic element. And so when I investigated this thing called romance and joined Romance Writers of America, I discovered paranormal romance, where I discovered that I could put everything I love together under that umbrella. So it enables me to have the romance, the supernatural, the science fiction, a little touch of horror, so CNSC, so it all blends together into that niche for me. So it's been fun getting to the point where I really feel that this is my home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's interesting. I actually take all of the genres that interest you and put them all together, and that there is a genre for that.
Yes. Yes.
Now, your most recent book is titled Legacy of Evil, the Hotel LaBelle series, book two. Tell us about that.
Well, this picks up after The Haunting of Hotel LaBelle. The book takes place in Billings, Montana, and the lead character, Emma Horse Rider, I'm wavering because her undercover name is Emma Bear Killer, and that comes later in the story. I call her Emma Bear Killer in my mind. Anyway, Emma Horse Rider is called in to calm a herd. She's a telepath and a horse whisperer, and there's been an attack on a herd of wild Mustangs on the Montana-Wyoming border. And she's called in to calm the herd down, and while she's there communing with one of the horses, a bullet-spewing drone attacks them and is actually aiming at her. And she is she survives the attack, and I don't know spoilers, I'm going to tell you how, but she goes home quite shaken up, and she calls her brother, who runs the Anomaly Defense Division, which is where in Homeland Security, which they don't know that they have that division unless they're listening to this, which they probably are. But anyway, I plugged it into the Science and Technology Directorate of Homeland Security. So that's where all the paranormal people go. And so she calls her brother, and her help roars into her life covered in tattoos and riding a Harley. And he's a remote viewer. He has his own special abilities, and he takes the assignment because he's told to do it, but he wonders what kind of assistance his boss's sisters needs until he meets her. They wind up posing as a married couple to go undercover to infiltrate and stop a domestic terrorist group, a hate group. And they're both anxious, and they're having growing romance, and there's lots of possibilities for this whole adventure to blow up in their faces. And so the question is, will they survive, and or will they die, let alone have a chance at love? So it's it was fun to write. I did do a lot of research for this one, and it was nice because I had already built the world in the other two books with the Anomaly Defense Division. And then placing it in Billings, Montana was really wonderful, and having a hotel, because this series now will have a life of its own. In terms of, you know, having a hotel gives you an opportunity to bring in new characters, new people, whether they're visitors or people who live in the area. And Billings, a fantastic part of the country. I was just there this summer, and I'm ready to go back and do more research. So it's it was fun to do the research, and it was fun to write the story.
It sounds like it. So there will be more books in this Hotel LaBelle series.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there will. I'm already working on the next one. Yep.
Wow, exciting, exciting. So you mentioned that you were a plotter. So initially, did the plot come to you? Did the idea for the story, or was there a character that was the catalyst for this?
Well, Emma was a secondary character in The Haunting of Hotel LaBelle. She a key character, but a secondary character. And so I really liked her. I liked her a lot, and I wanted to give her her own story. And so having that character was great, and I didn't have a really deep backstory for her at that time, and so I was able to do that. I started with her character in the first story and then built on that. And my writing involves building the characters first and then the plot coming from the characters and what they would do. I hate it when I'm reading a book and you've acquired, you know, gotten used to this character, and you know their mind and how they think, and then suddenly they do something really crazy or implausible. And I find that very frustrating. So as I plot the book, I try to make sure that everything that they do is in keeping with their character. So she's a horse whisperer and a telepath. They're in a terrible situation. What does she need to enable her to, you know, use those gifts appropriately and to help them get out of this terrible situation? Bronco, the hero, is a remote viewer. He has, you know, he can see things, but there's obstacles in his way, something that's very troubling. He has a very deep backstory as well. The legacy of evil is his legacy that he brings to the table. She has an interesting backstory in terms of her own secrets. And so when I build the characters, I build all that into my character sheet. And I've taken lots of courses, and Karen Doctor is a great teacher for helping you to develop character. And she's the person that I really thank a lot for helping me to work on my characters. And I use the sheets that she gave us in those courses to this day, and this is many years later, to help me dig into the characters. Where did they come from? Why are they doing this? What's their biggest fear? What's their biggest trauma? What's their family background? And so you have a three-dimensional character, and when I have a villain, I like to do the same thing for the villain. You know, I'm not a fan of the mustache-twirling villain. That's really very bad when you have a cardboard, stereotypical villain. Mm-hmm. So you want to have somebody who, you know, maybe has a mother that he takes care of or a cat that he loves very much. There has to be some redeeming character in that villain, just as there has to be some flaw in the hero or heroine. Otherwise, they come across as, you know, too good, goody-two-shoes.
Absolutely. There's a lot of thought that goes into character development, and you are absolutely correct. You can spot that pretty quickly when you're reading a book, and you get to that point. It's like, okay, someone did not think this one through.
Yeah, exactly. What do you mean she can fly?
I like it. About the names of your characters, how do you go about selecting their names?
Well, I try to make it something that's consistent with their personality and that also stands out. Emma was already there as a character and in the first book, and her real name was Emma Blackfeather, the same as her brother, Bert Blackfeather. But she changed her name to Horse Rider to reflect her connection with horses. And the Crow people have this incredible relationship with horses that they're really like part of their bodies when they're riding them. And when they connect with them, it's their like their family members. And they are really very rooted with horses. And so Emma is a reflection of that cultural piece of how connected the Crow people are with their horses. And so she has this deep background, and the reason she has the name of Emma Bear Killer in the story is to make her tougher in terms of infiltrating this group. But she actually did, in her backstory, she killed a bear with a hunting knife, and she carries that hunting knife with her always to protect herself, and she uses it in other ways. Bronco, his real name is Brandon, but he is someone who is an undercover alcohol, tobacco, and firearms and explosives agent, and he infiltrated motorcycle clubs, the outlaw groups, and he was, he's covered in tattoos, he's got these motorcycle club tattoos, and he also thinks like a motorcycle club person, and he is so deep into that world that he has to step back at a point where he almost does something that's completely unethical and immoral. And so he is taken out. He is relieved to be taken out and put into a different agency because he realized he's crossing that line. And one of the things that's very interesting and is very critical about these kind of characters is that, you know, sometimes in the real world, people do cross that line, and it can be very challenging to take that mask off and go back to who you were. Mm-hmm. So his road name is Bronco, but he also, you know, I like the fact that, you know, she's a horse whisperer and his name is Bronco. Mm-hmm. So she, as soon as she meets him, she knows that this guy is going to be a challenge.
You know, as you're speaking, I so enjoy listening to authors speak about their characters, because as you're talking, you could almost be talking about your son or a neighbor or a family member. It no longer becomes a fictional character. This person is real. I can imagine that, you know, you go to bed at night or you're shopping in the store and you're thinking about Bronco and Emma, and it's just a fascinating way to live in your own mind.
Yeah, they do become people in your lives. Mm-hmm. It's funny you say that. In the first book, I have a pug, and it's based on she's based on my own pug, and she provides a lot of humorous relief. And in this book, we have a bobcat named Gaucho, and he's Bronco's partner, and he provides some humorous relief as well. I like to have animals in the story that are partners or you know, companions with the main characters, because they have their own little characters too, and they provide a little respite from some of the tension of the story.
I like that. That's very smart. Very smart. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about your book writing process. Where, when, how, because you're still working full time.
I have a day job.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
I'm a professor and program coordinator for a master's in healthcare management program. And so I'm very lucky in that I have summers, you know, I have 2 months off in the summer. I still respond to emails and phone calls and stuff like that, but my time is really pretty much my own. So in addition to being able to use my summer time to do research, I spend a lot of time on the weekends doing my writing and my researching. We have lots of flexibility now that our son is an adult and we have a grandson, but pretty much other than that, my husband and I are responsible for ourselves. So I'm at a good point in my life where I have that flexibility in my life so I can write. And, you know, people are like, how do you get it done? And I say, well, I don't sleep. Don't you know? I don't sleep. So, I'm not very good at, you know, number of words a day, because I write in sort of a blitzkrieg. I'll sit down and over the course of a weekend, I'll write, you know, like 20 pages. And if I'm on a deadline, I write really fast. But the absolutely first thing I have to have, I have to do my character sketches, and then I do my plots and my plotting grid, and then I can sit down and write.
Mm-hmm. And way across in another world, you've written healthcare management textbooks, so that's completely different from what you're doing now. Are you still writing those?
Oh, yes. Actually, I'm going to be doing a fourth edition of my best-selling textbook, Introduction to Healthcare Management. The feedback on that book's really wonderful, and my publisher is wild about us because it sells very nicely. That book started out as a glimmer in my eye with another friend, Nancy Shanks, who she and I were both complaining about the textbooks we were using for our first introductory course in healthcare management. And after going back and forth 20 minutes about, you know, these books are horrible and I wish somebody would write a book. And then I looked at her and I said, you should write a book. And then she said, no, you should write a book. And then we went, oh my God, we should write a book. And that's how it came about. But she and I have been good partners. And the nice thing about that book is my fiction writing informs my nonfiction. And 100% of the reviews and the comments back from instructors and reviewers on Amazon is this book is really fun to read, and it's very engaging. And students keep the book for future reference. It's not, you know, it's not one of these dry as dust tomes, because Nancy and I go through it and check for active voice. We make sure that it's engaging to the reader. We have a lot of case studies that are like short stories. So my fiction has really been very helpful to my nonfiction.
Your fiction fuels the tone for your nonfiction, your healthcare management textbooks. It's better that way than the other way around.
Well, it goes both ways in terms of research. So I'm a research junkie. So it helps me with that when I'm working on something for the, you know, for healthcare management research. I'll go, ooh, that would make an interesting story.
Wow.
Put it in my story ideas file.
Oh, I love how you've melded all of this together.
I like to blend things, yes. I'm one of those people that when I was growing up and going for job searches, people would look at my resume and go, "What? I'm really confused. I don't understand. What have you been doing with your life?"
I think I'm still one of those people.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's just so many wonderful things out there. Why should you confine yourself to just one or two?
Exactly. Right.
Yep. That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to do anything poorly. You know, you obviously want to do well at what you're doing, but there's just so much to know and learn. So speaking of learning, as you've been writing these books, what have you learned about yourself?
I have found that it's really challenging and gut-wrenching to reach down and rip that emotion out and put it on paper. My editor is always coming back at me and going, you got to dig harder, you got to dig harder. And when I do, I mean, it's potent, but that's like the hardest thing for me to do. I'm not a person who is, you know, real maudlin or someone who is, you know, easy to expose, or, you know, rip her guts out in public. I don't, you know, that picking at wounds sort of thing going over and over, something that hurt me these years ago. But when you're writing, you need that. You need to go back and rip the scabs off those wounds and find that pain and find that emotion and put it into your book. And that's hard.
That's not an easy task.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not.
That's really hard work.
Not for the faint of heart.
Mm-hmm.
So what, as you're writing your books also, what do you feel is important? Is it the entertainment value? Is there a message? What do you want your readers to take away?
I want my readers to sit down and not be able to get out of their chair because they want to know what's going to happen on the next page. I want them to be engaged and entertained. I want them to laugh. I want them to be moved. Laugh, cry. And along the way, I hope if I can infuse some message or some information that they hadn't known before, that's great. But the first and foremost is to engage and entertain, because that's the purpose of fiction, is to take us away.
Absolutely.
Because we can open up the newspaper and see horrible stuff every day, but if I can wrap you up in a story and get you so engaged that you say, gosh, it's dark out, and I sat down at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's what I want.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think you've accomplished that, my friend. I really, really do.
Thank you.
Well, we've talked about quite a few things, but I want to make sure we haven't missed anything that you wanted to share today.
The book is a part of the series. The Haunting of Hotel LaBelle is the first book, but I've had a number of people tell me that it can be read as a standalone. That, you know, I've woven in the characters from the first book sufficiently. They don't take over the story, but they're, you know, if you're missing your old friends, that's a great way to do it. So one reviewer said that I gave the readers a chance to check back into the Hotel LaBelle with this fast-paced and hot sequel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, going back and visiting old friends is what a lot of people like to do with that. So just keep that in mind that that there's book one and two, but you can read them independently for sure.
Excellent. And where can folks go then to learn more about you, your books, and where can they purchase your books?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available at the Wild Rose Press, which is my publisher. So there's a lot of different book distributors. It's on iTunes, Google, just about everywhere a book is sold, an ebook. You can get print books too. Amazon will do print on demand. There are still people who read print books. I know. They prefer them. And so that's an option you can do on Amazon or through the Wild Rose Press as well. Make sure you spell my name right. It's B-U-C-H-B-I-N-D-E-R. And just do a search on Sharon Bookbinder. I'm not the dancer or the mime. Just want to put that out there right now because there's someone who's a dancer and a mime. And because I Googled my own name one time, I was very surprised to see this woman dancing in a mime costume. And I'm like, yeah. That's not me.
What's Sharon up to now? That's so funny. Well, if you Google me, you're going to get a boxer from Italy.
Oh, there you go.
I love that. So give us your website again.
It's www.sharonbookbinder.com, S-H-A-R-O-N. Bookbinder, BUCHBINDER.com.
All right, excellent. SharonBookbinder.com. Well, my friend, any final words before we say goodbye?
No, happy reading.
And happy reading your books.
Thank you.
Yes, what a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much. It's been a really lively and fun conversation. I've enjoyed my time, and I look forward to your upcoming books.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.